From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. At Pearl Harbor today, old soldiers gathered to mark the 60th anniversary of the attack on America. Back in 1941, the drama shifted to Washington the next day. On December 8th, President Roosevelt went before a joint session of Congress and asked for a declaration of war. Millions listened that day, among them Walter Cronkite, the man who would later anchor the CBS Evening News throughout the 1960s and 70s, was then a young United Press editor in Kansas City, listening in on KMBC.
I ask Congress to declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
It was about 12:40 p.m. when President Roosevelt finished speaking, then quickly left the rostrum on the arm of his son. Already the phrase, Day of Infamy, was acquiring a life of its own in the UP and AP wire copy. But before the war could start, one final ritual of a congressional ceremony remained, a formal declaration. Through a remarkable combination of accident and audacity, it would be a ritual the entire country would be able to eavesdrop on. I had never heard House Speaker Sam Rayburn in action before. He'd only been Speaker for less than a year and was not yet the legislative legend he would become. But he was formidable nonetheless.
Senators and representatives will maintain their places until the cabinet has retired from the chamber and the Supreme Court.
As CBS and NBC cut away to their studios and reporters, the chronically impoverished and understaffed Mutual Network had no place and no one to cut to. So it simply lingered in the House chamber, its microphones open in violation of House rules. Across the country, a few discerning people, mostly reporters such as myself, leaned toward their radios, hardly believing their ears, but knowing that they were witness to an historic blunder, the only live radio broadcast of a regular session of Congress in American history.
And here comes Senator Barclay and minority Republican leader of the House, Senator McNary. Behind him, Senator Austin, then Senator Tom Connolly.
As the senators filed out of the House beneath the Mutual booth, Mutual's Fulton Lewis Jr. reeled off the names. Among them, a parade of isolationist Senate barons like Charles McNary, who had blocked Woodrow Wilson's League of Nations in 1919. Others like Arthur Vandenberg would help shape a post-war world yet to emerge. Also in the group was an obscure Missouri senator whose fate it would be to end the war about to be declared.
Then immediately behind Senator Vandenberg, who's been somewhat on the isolationist side. Then Senator Truman and Senator Guffey, Senator Truman of Missouri. Now coming down the aisle is Senator Hiram Johnson, the beloved figure from California, has been on the isolationist side.
Few in the House that day had been more isolationist than Fulton Lewis Jr. himself, the Mutual Network's most popular news commentator. Before the war, he was a critic of Lend-Lease, an ally of Charles Lindbergh, and a skeptic of Ed Murrow's reports on the London Blitz. After the war, he would become a powerful supporter of Senator Joseph McCarthy. But he was also a tenacious reporter who had been raised in Washington and knew the city and its power brokers as well as anyone.
Down here in, just below me in a purple dress, is Miss Jeanette Rankin.
Jeanette Rankin was a Montana Republican. She became the first woman in American history elected to Congress. She might have had a great legislative career. But in 1917, she joined 49 other House members to vote against American entry into World War I. It made her unelectable in 1918. For the next 22 years, she remained an outspoken pacifist. In 1940, she ran again for Congress and won. In December 1941, her views were well known, and all eyes were on her as Majority Leader John McCormick moved the question.
Mr. Speaker, I move to suspend the rules and pass the joint resolution which I have sent to the desk.
Second question, resolution.
That the state of war between the United States and the imperial government of Japan, which has thus been thrust upon the United States, is hereby formally declared.
Second commanded.
At this point, Rankin rose to object, but was quickly cut off by Rayburn.
Gentlemen from Massachusetts,
I yield 20 seconds to myself.
Gentlemen from Massachusetts, is recognized for 20 seconds.
Mr. Speaker, my fellow Americans, a dastardly attack has been made upon us. This is the time for action.
McCormick held the floor, yielding to isolationists now eager to recant their isolation. First to Minority Leader Joe Martin.
In view of the developments of the past 48 hours, the President's request has my support. I hope there will not be a single dissenting voice.
With that remark, some eyes may have turned to Rankin. He rose again to address the chair. Rayburn ignored her as spectators told her to sit down, and the House members demanded to vote.
And now they're calling for a vote. Now they're calling to shout down any further debate, to have a vote here and now, a most unusual procedure.
The gentleman from New York, Mr. Fish, is recognized for 3 minutes.
Mr. Speaker, whom the gods would destroy, they first make man. The Japanese have gone stark, raving mad. There is no sacrifice too great that I will not make in defense of America and to help annihilate these war-mad Japanese devils.
Words such as Japanese devils came easily that day as dishonored isolationists suddenly became fervent warriors. Much more easily than any words of regret or admission about how wrong they had been for so long. 20 minutes after the President's address, word came that the Senate was voting on the war resolution. In the House, reporters were watching a growing contest of wills between Rankin and Rayburn.
First of all, let me tell you that the little passage that took place at the beginning of this debate, Miss Janet Rankin tried to get recognized here. She stood in the aisle and raised her hand. The first time, the Speaker angrily brought down his gavel and said, "Let there be no objection to the unanimous consent agreement." Then we have just had a flash here that there was no debate in the Senate.
90 seconds later, as Congresswoman Byron of Maryland started speaking, the flash came that the Senate had voted.
Gentlewoman from Maryland.
The Senate has adopted the resolution, ladies and gentlemen.
My husband, Bill Byron, was in the last war, that I am 100% back of America.
The Senate has adopted the resolution, ladies and gentlemen. We just have a flash from there that they have passed it.
Meanwhile, congressional staff people realized that the House proceedings were going out to the radio audience. One of them rushed up to the Mutual booth to stop the broadcast. Listeners heard muffled voices as Lewis covered his microphone and Representative John Casey spoke on the floor.
Well, we just had a most amusing experience here, ladies and gentlemen. One of the aides from downstairs had just come up, and despite the fact that we have complete permits here and tickets and so forth, and all arrangements made, one of the aides got excited and came up and said that we were not to continue to broadcast. We will continue to broadcast because he has no authority to cut us off.
A minute later, at what we soon would be calling 2:05 Eastern wartime, McCormick called the question and Rayburn ended the debate. If you listen very carefully, you can hear Rankin's protest.
The question is, will the House suspend the rules and pass the resolution? Those in favor of taking the vote for the ayes and those rise and remain standing until counted. Evidently a sufficient number. And
now, ladies and gentlemen, they're taking the vote here. He called for the ayes. They stood up.
Suspending the rules and passing the resolution will, when their names are called, vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, call the roll.
Allen of Illinois.
When Rankin continued seeking recognition, Rayburn addressed her directly.
Aye. Our call cannot
be interrupted by an emotion or a point of order. Clerk, call the roll. Anderson of Minnesota. Aye.
As the roll call proceeded, more House aides rushed upstairs and shut down the Mutual broadcast.
Boggs.
Aye.
The roll call was deep into the bees before Lewis was moved out of the House chamber and into the radio broadcast center just off the floor.
It may interest you to know that quite by accident, we had transgressed one of the rules of the Congress. This became the first broadcast ever to be made of a session of Congress.
Meanwhile, the Senate had voted.
The vote there was 82 to nothing. It was taken at 2 minutes after two. There were no dissenting votes in the Senate, and we'll wait to see now what happens here in the House of Representatives. There was a very, very impressive and very dramatic occasion in there that I was telling you about. Miss Jeanette Rankin tried to the very bitter end to get recognition from the floor. She even made a point of order trying to get recognition from the floor, whether or not she wanted to object to this resolution, as she objected to the passage of the war resolution during World War Number One. We do not know. But as a matter of fact, it may turn out sooner or later that Miss Rankin actually wanted to make a speech in favor of this resolution, although, as I say, we have been unable to tell.
Rankin would say nothing of the kind. When her name was called, she cast a lone but unmitigated no. But with Mutual evicted from the House chamber by them, the country never heard it, or the boos that accompanied it.
Miss, we just have a flash from the House floor that Miss Jeanette Rankin has voted no.
So at 2:13, America was officially at war. Montana's GOP National Committeeman was so outraged by Rankin, he demanded she change her vote to save Montana's honor. Rankin was stung by the hostility. 2 days later, when the House declared war on Germany, she served Montana's honor by simply voting present. From then on, Rankin's colleagues ignored her. She was irrelevant. On the first anniversary of the war, and shortly before she left Congress for the final time, she entered her last words as a U.S. representative into the congressional record, the only forum left to her by then, since no one was listening. She died just short of her 93rd birthday in 1973, remembered as the one member of Congress paralyzed by principle in the face of an enemy attack in 1941. This is Walter Cronkite in New York for National Public Radio.